during the Biden administration's 2021 Afghanistan withdrawal, the CIA struck a secret deal to evacuate and resettle over 85,000 Afghans, including members of its elite Zero Units paramilitary force, with little to no vetting.
John Solomon at Just the News just published an article that the Afghan assassin who shot the two National Guard members was brought over as part of a secret deal negotiated between the CIA under Joe Biden and the Afghan special forces who had been working with the CIA on the ground as part of the counterinsurgency against the Taliban. So this means not only was the Afghan refugee who did this working with the CIA on the ground, but in fact, the whole reason he is here is because of a negotiated agreement between the CIA and those Afghan militia and special forces folks who were assisting the CIA. And this is not an unusual thing.
Analyst Mike Benz revealed this was part of a deliberate strategy treating mass immigration as a remittance pipeline to fund CIA-backed militias abroad using U.S. taxpayer dollars sent home by evacuees.
In fact, it's so common that I think its impact has to be assessed and frankly declassified as to whether or not the CIA has reached such agreements, for example, with fighters in Somalia, whether the CIA has reached such agreements for resettlement and refugee status in Iraq, in Haiti, in you name it, you name your combat zone, and how much of U.S. refugee programs, these kind of negotiated agreements between military and intelligence and the refugees are in our whole system?
Well, first, I would say we have a stringent vetting process, which includes background checks before any individual comes to the United States. So I can't speak to one individual, but I can tell you and confirm for you that we take the vetting of any individual who comes to the United States and comes out incredibly seriously.
The extraordinary success of this mission was due to the incredible skill, bravery, and selfless courage of the United States military and our diplomats and intelligence professionals.
Regardless of the BS Biden fed all of us, standard security screenings were deliberately bypassed for these CIA-trained fighters, many of whom suffered severe PTSD and harbored resentment over the debacle of the U.S. abandonment of Kabul on Biden's watch.
When they land, if they choose not to go to the military base and to walk, they're able to do that.
They must receive, for example, certain immunizations in order to enter the interior of the United States.
Well, but my point is, we don't have a system in place to keep people who want to walk. Now, the other question is, who are these people? And as I said, 75% of them are not green card holders, they're not citizens, they're not SIV holders, they're not even applicants for SIV. And this notion that they've been vetted as we would normally vet, I mean, how can we vet people? Are you going to call the Taliban government and say, you know, is this information about this criminal record accurate? Of course we can't. Normally we would be able to contact the government. Of course, we didn't have an embassy because we had evacuated it. So we didn't go through the normal screening to, Director Abizaid, your answer earlier, we didn't go through the normal screening process that you would for someone applying for a visa. You couldn't because we didn't have the visa officials in the foreign office there to do it. So
Lakhanwal was resettled in Bellingham, Washington in late 2021 under the U.S. government's Operation Allies Welcome Program. He arrived with his wife and five young sons on humanitarian parole, was initially hosted for 2 months by local private sponsors Stanley and Valerie Creighton, who raised money for the family via a now-deleted GoFundMe, and received 90-day resettlement assistance from World Relief and longer-term case management from the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants. Over 76,000 Afghan individuals arrived via humanitarian parole, with an additional 114,000 resettled through the follow-up on Operating Enduring Welcome from 2022 to 2025.
We are live, still on air. this fight. All the admissions of the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to shut us down. But despite that, because you, the activist audience in the arena, stood with us with your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, we have not only persevered, we have not only overcome, but we have dominated.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com today.
The spirit of victory lives in InfoWars. And InfoWars is more than a URL. It is more than this building. It is the people of America and the world becoming awake and standing up and rising and demanding liberty and freedom in the animating contest in the war against the tyrants.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome to the American Journal. I am Brianna Morello. And as you can tell, we're not at our normal set. I'm here in the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. because, well, the corporate media hacks refuse to comply with simple rules. And because of that, we are now replacing them. But many of you already replaced the corporate media with us, of course, because in this battle for truth, so many times those in the corporate media world were caught flat out lying or spewing propaganda. And so here we are now. I guess we just have like a larger audience at this point because the American people, they don't trust the media. And that's what's going on here. So as many of you guys saw on social media, we did our very best to ask the tough questions while we were over in the Pentagon. And there were a lot of questions that we were grilling the new officials with, of course, trying to get to the bottom of a lot. I mean, a lot. Like the audit, the Afghan withdrawal, when we're going to see that report. I sat with several officials here at the Pentagon, and this is how it went. Sergeant Major, thank you for being here with me today. We're very excited to have you on the show. I kind of wanted to go over and start this off by just talking about Venezuela. It's kind of a strange time for us right now because we are in a spot where all of a sudden now the mainstream media has kind of, they've become advocates for narco-terrorists. And you never thought we'd be in this place, but here we are right now. They're over here and they're attacking the Pentagon, attacking the president for what he's been able to do so far. We're talking 21 strikes, 83 narco-terrorists dead. What's your take of the media going after this administration like this?
Well, Anthony, I've been up here for almost a year now, and nothing surprises me at this point. You know, President Trump's agenda and his focus on the Western Hemisphere is long overdue. Our response right now, and just demonstrating that this isn't going to be tolerated anymore, allowing these drugs to be brought into our country, has been so far, so overdue, and it's wanted not just needed by the U.S., it's also by all the countries in the Western Hemisphere. They look to us for leadership. President Trump is providing that leadership. And these other countries that are being affected, just like the United States is completely getting on board with their full support. Venezuela has been a problem within the entire region, not just to the United States. And you have a lot of, it's not just drugs, that's like the main point everybody looks at, but it's also human trafficking, it's also human smuggling, it's also firearm trafficking. And these are things not just affecting the U.S., but it's affecting the whole region. So it's way overdue for us to get involved, and we're lucky to have President Trump making this a priority and allowing us to focus on this and get after the issue.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that we focus on this. I want to also focus on the people who are on these vessels. Obviously, we're being told they're narco-terrorists. The drug cartels tend to use civilians in a lot of different tasks, and they'll maybe blackmail them and make them do things. Are we 100% certain that the people that are on these vessels, I know the media likes to poke and say these might be innocent people who are going after, we should be very careful, but are we 100% certain that these are narco-terrorists that are on these boats, that these are people who are actually involved directly with the cartels?
I can just tell you, this thing isn't taken lightly. Mm-hmm. We're taking action. We're taking lethal action. We're taking people's lives. I can tell you, you know, I've been there. I've seen the process. It is very deliberate. It is, these things are vetted several different ways, and it is 100% that they are part of the cartels or supporting the cartels. Yeah. They're not, you know, anybody pointing out there anything otherwise has no concept of the amount of work that goes into before any of these strikes are taken. It's not taken lightly.
Yeah. And right now we're focused on Venezuela, but obviously this region alone, there's a lot of countries that we could kind of focus on and shift our attention to. Are there any other countries you guys are looking at to potentially combat this drug war that we have going on right now?
It's not just a one country issue. Like, we look at it, you know, here from the Department of War, you know, a lot of this stuff originates in South America. The drugs are moved either by air or mostly by maritime. To Central America, and it breaks up beyond the ground, goes into Mexico, and then the arrival zone is the United States. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to defeat an entire network. Mm-hmm. So a lot of some of these countries, like we're looking at Venezuela, are key players in this, but it's affecting, it's not just one location. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important to work with the partner nations in the Western Hemisphere, help them develop their capacity so they can do their part, which they want to do. They just needed that leadership from the United States that President Trump is displaying, and that's what we're going after.
Well, the Secretary of War has made it a top priority to make sure that our service members are in top shape. I know this is something that you're also working with as well, make sure that they're healthy, that they are fit. I mean, that was a big one, surprisingly, to just even have to come in here and demand that everyone's in great shape. What are some of the things that you've been working on to make sure that does happen?
So we're towards my time, I did 26 years on active duty, then I worked as a Department of Defense contractor, then I was a Department of Defense civilian. So I've been involved in this, in the game, since I was 17. Bring a lot of different experience to the table. We got towards the end of my career, I want to say probably like in the 2005 time period, the military was getting a lot of non-warfighting tasks put on it as a burden. As a small unit leader, you only have so much time to prepare for combat, get your troops ready, and if a lot of that time is focused on some of this, like, you know, some of the DEI type stuff, things that are just not non-warfighting focus, you lose focus on what's important. I'm a combat veteran, just like the secretary, and our focus, you change. There's nothing wrong with the troops that hadn't served. They will get their chance to serve downrange in combat. The one thing you get by serving in combat is our priorities are maybe a little bit different. They may be a little bit more narrow to focus on battle drills, medical training, marksmanship, physical fitness. If your units can do all those things, they're able to do what we're asking to do as a country, is to go into dangerous places and fight and win our nation's wars.
Yeah.
So that's, if we're not focusing on that, it's not important.
Yeah, and that's very important. And I want to, you know, kind of end on this, the DEI aspect to all of this. When you guys stepped in, there was a lot of DEI all over the Pentagon, and you guys are weeding that out, which we're very thankful for. What have been some of the challenges in that?
I think a lot of it is nothing we're doing is controversial, in my opinion. You know, we looked at, you heard a lot of stuff on the secretary's speech, several of them that he gave, some of the things that we changed. None of this is controversial. How can anybody argue against, we want troops that are tougher. We want troops that are stronger. We want troops that can shoot better, that have the best equipment. Like, none of that's controversial. So getting rid of some of these non-warfighting tasks, there's nothing controversial about that. We're trying to focus with the military on what our country expects the military to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And who knew that, you know, but we want to raise the standards. How can anybody argue against that? Yeah. And it's surprising, some of the people that have come out of the woodwork, some retired senior-ranking individuals, you know, kind of calling on the secretary like this is something controversial. This is nothing controversial. This is what makes our military great and makes us the best military in the entire world.
Yeah. No, it does. It does. And it's great to see you guys making that a top priority, of course. Thank you for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Joining me now is Lieutenant Colonel Stu Scheller. Welcome to the show. We're very excited to have you on today. Everyone's talking right now about Afghanistan and the migrants we took in from Afghanistan. I want to get to that later on, but I just wanted to get your thoughts. Obviously, last week we saw a horrific terror attack be carried out, and sadly, one guardsman losing their life and one fighting for his life. Your reaction to what we saw take place?
That was criminal. Yeah. Secretary of War has already come out and said that this will only strengthen our resolve. I took a lot of, we all were lifted up by his leadership. But the bottom line is the lack of vetting was a byproduct of the poor plan that was executed. So right now I'm a deputy for the Afghan Special Review Panel. We've come together in about October, and we plan to have a final report out in February. Why all the facts haven't come to light yet is beyond me, but there's a lot of facts. That's the thing that the Secretary of War gave us and said, just follow the facts and see where they go. There are multiple decision points that senior military leaders made that could have prevented not only the Abbeygate incident, but vetting people in a more orderly and organized fashion that just didn't happen because of a poorly planned and executed operation.
Now, how do we vet these people? Because the reality of it is, and we heard the Border Czar talk about this, these people who are coming into our country, they were first brought onto military bases, many of them, thousands of them. And who do you turn to find out their background? Obviously, the Taliban's not going to tell you if they're one of theirs. So how do you even vet these individuals?
I'll tell you, it's very difficult. So my background, I've served in Afghanistan, I've served in Iraq, and the military uses what's called a bats and hide system, and that requires a lance corporal on patrol to meet a certain person, put them in the system, and then you're still kind of requiring what they tell you. So the military's capability is, you know, as best we can going out there and gathering this information. But I think the answer to your question is you need time. You need time to be able to go through all these systems because all the interagencies don't talk very well. They all have different methods for tracking. So if you're going to bring hundreds of thousands of individuals into the country over a very condensed timeline, you need the time to vet them. And that just wasn't done in this situation.
Yeah, it wasn't. And I want to kind of get into now the report that you guys are working on, obviously. Yeah. Is there anything you could share with the American people? Because I know it's coming out early next year. But is there anything that you're able to share with us?
What I'll just say is senior military leaders have sat on information. I'm sorry. The senior military leaders have sat on information. You know, these are facts. These aren't opinions. We just gave an IPR brief to the Secretary of War last month, and he repeated, follow the facts, see where they go, don't be emotional. He looked right at me when he said, don't be emotional. You know, I'm very invested in this. But he's absolutely right. We take a lot from his leadership. And the bottom line is, senior military leaders, when President Biden gave the order to withdraw from Afghanistan, you know, all the investigations that have taken place so far point back to President Biden. He was the commander-in-chief. But no one has taken a hard look from the middle of April to the end of September, the decisions that military leaders made. President Biden made an assumption that military leaders were capable and competent enough to execute a military plan, and it just didn't play out that way. Mm-hmm. And those are the facts that are all going to be laid out to the American people, declassified, and I think they deserve to know. Not only is the president saying that it was the worst day in American history, Secretary of War is asking for it, but the American people, the families who lost loved ones, and not just the 13 at the Abbeygate, we're talking about the thousands that served over two decades of war, we deserved a little bit of a better ending.
Yeah, I mean, we do. All your service members do, of course. And you have obviously felt the ramifications for speaking out on the subject matter, obviously. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
This is something that you've had to endure. And you're back, obviously, in the Pentagon.
That's right.
You are a part of this process. But I want to talk about what happened to you, because I think that's so crazy for the American people to understand. Speaking out, offering criticism, I mean, it got you jailed.
It did, yeah. So you introduced me in the beginning as Lieutenant Colonel Scheller. Most people know me as that. I wrote a book. But I got out at 17 years. And ultimately, when that day happened, August 26th in 2021, I made a social media video. If you go back and watch the content, it was pretty by the book. The headlines all read that I criticized President Biden, but if you actually read the video or listen to the video, I just talked about senior military leaders that could have made better decisions and that somebody should be held accountable. Following that video, I was fired. I was sent to a mental health hospital to try to be admitted. I was imprisoned for 9 days. My medical records were released to a member of the press here, who's no longer here, thankfully, because that would be a tough interview with that individual. But it just, any good leader when I just made a comment. Did I violate the social media policy? Yes. Was I conduct unbecoming a gentleman? Yes. But if I was the commandant, I would have put my arm around me and been like, Stu, you made some mistakes, but this is obviously the end of a very dramatic war. We did this poorly. Let's go around the force and talk about it. But it was just another example in a long line of leadership just didn't do what it should have done. Mm-hmm. It didn't make the hard choices, and that's brought us to today. Thankfully, we've got a Secretary of War like Mr. Hegseth. He brought me on the team, and I'm just trying to help anywhere that I can.
And I think it's really awesome that they brought you back in, obviously, yeah. And they're trying to make right by all of this. Do you think that everything's even now? Is everything fair, or what would you like to see done to make sure and repair this? Because you don't want to see this happen to somebody else.
Yeah. Bottom line is, Secretary of War has refocused the department on the warrior ethos, and I think that is where we need to get back to. But a lot of the leaders that made some of these decisions are still in place, and so we're going back and looking at some of the decisions that were made specifically for the Afghanistan, just to review, you know, the impacts of this. And I think the most important thing about Afghanistan is so that it doesn't happen again. Vietnam, we saw what happened there. Yeah. You know, Afghanistan, eerily similar, even though President Biden said it wouldn't be another Saigon. We need to go back and make sure we learn from this. And so I think, you know, there's things that I would maybe be more aggressive about, but that's why I'm not in charge, because I think the right temperament is leading the department, and I'm just happy to be part of the team.
Yeah, well, that's great, and we love to hear that, and we love to hear that you're part of the team now, of course, because you've earned it, you've earned this. Before you go, though, I want to ask you, Seditious Six, we saw, obviously, the video that went out, obviously very controversial. From your perspective, what do you make of all of this, and what needs to be done, because you can't just allow these officials to go out there and to tell service members that they don't have to comply with orders given by the president?
Absolutely. The implications are huge. The fact that you'd have sitting Congress members, senators and House reps, influence service members to make poor decisions that would ruin their life, that deeply troubled me. And so, and I'm not going to go too far on this, but I'll just say, like, that bothered me. When I'm in a war zone, the last thing I want is a service member to be thinking about larger political, you know, is this order legal? And we need service members that can close with and destroy the enemy and trust their leadership. And to even sprinkle doubt in that, I think, weakens the base that we need. So, yeah, I was disgusted by it, if I could use just one word.
Yeah, it truly was disgusting. Thank you for joining us. Yeah. We appreciate it. All the incredible work you guys are doing here. So thank you.
Thank you, Anna.
Join me now is Michael Duffy, because we've got a lot to talk about in regards to our weapons in this country. And I'm excited to have you here. There were a lot of reports last year in regards to us assisting Ukraine, and there were reports that we might have been short on a lot of the items that we actually are, the weapons that we did need. Where are we on that?
President Trump has made it a clear priority to rebuild our military, replenish our stockpiles, grow our industrial base. And so shortly after I was confirmed in the job this summer, we made it a priority to focus on growing the munitions industrial base. Mm-hmm. We've had regular engagement with industry leadership to identify where there's opportunities to, in some cases, triple or quadruple the rate at which we produce our missiles and create the incentives and the opportunity for us to partner with industry and grow that industrial base. I think you'll see we recently announced acquisition reform, and a major outcome of that I think there will be an announcement in the near future, is an opportunity to really take advantage of the work we've done under President Trump's leadership to grow our industrial base and to grow the our missile stockpiles to defend the country.
Can you go into detail a bit about the acquisitions program itself? Because I think that's something really fascinating.
Absolutely. So my office has oversight over all contracts, weapon systems, installations, the nuclear deterrent. And so we're focused on, in partnership with the military departments, the Army, Navy, Air Force, managing and optimizing for speed, for cost, and performance our purchase of all of our weapon systems. Last month, Secretary Hegseth rolled out the Acquisition Transformation Strategy, which is a comprehensive document that looks to completely transform how the bureaucracy goes about buying our weapon systems, prioritizing speed, pushing authority to make decisions about which systems we buy and how much we buy and how we buy them to the program managers within the services. That, I think, will really help us unleash the innovation that's not completely tapped in our greatest strength as a country, which is our innovative economy, and accelerate our ability to stay ahead of the enemy.
And I think that's important, too. And, you know, a lot of people are bringing up AI and how that could be used to help us in that sense. What are you guys doing here at the Pentagon to utilize AI and kind of weave it in? But also, obviously, there's security elements to it that might be concerning for American people.
Sure.
How do you address that?
Well, there are numerous ways we can apply AI. The one I'm interested in is how do we optimize how we manufacture and buy our weapon systems? Mm-hmm. We are kind of in the 20th century here in the Pentagon and how we manage our information, make decisions, manage our teams. And so I think digitizing and applying artificial intelligence in how we make decisions about where we spend our budgets, how we issue requests for proposal and award contracts would really allow us to our workforce to be much more productive in equipping our force with the weapons they need. But then, of course, there are many operational applications of AI to assist the warfighter in planning and executing any number of missions. And so we've got some work to do to bring the department into the 21st century digitally. And then on top of that, and my colleague Undersecretary Michael is very focused on how do we get artificial intelligence built into the enterprise.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to sit back and watch, of course, and we're excited to have now this space in the press room and to be able to ask you guys these types of questions.
Excellent.
So we look forward to watching it. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you as well.
All right, folks, as you can see, it was quite the event over at the Pentagon. I still have not made my way back to the studio yet, you know, flight delays, but we're pulling the extra shift these days right now. Folks, if you haven't done so already, make sure you head on over and give us all a follow right now on X. We've been dropping all of these exclusive details as to our Pentagon visits. I know the InfoWars X page has been sharing it as well. So head on over and do just that. But I wanted to bring you a breaking news update before we continue on with these interviews that I held over at the Pentagon. A lot more incredible people we're also going to be speaking to. Sean Parnell, as many of you guys know, he's the senior advisor and spokesperson for the Pentagon. So you're going to want to see that. But let me bring you this breaking news. This is a big one. As we were going to air, we learned that there might have been a possible arrest in the January 6th pipe bomber. As many of you guys know, this has been an ongoing investigation. The Blaze has reported and made an allegation of an individual they think is the pipe bomber. But according to this report put out by CNN and the Associated Press, there's apparently a Virginia man who has been arrested. The arrest happened earlier this morning. The FBI not confirming the identity of the suspect. We just know that this individual has been apprehended, has been arrested, and we're waiting to see if the DOJ does file any type of criminal paperwork on this individual. This would be a court filing, a criminal referral. I mean, it would be court filing itself with the list, the charges, the evidence against this individual. So we're waiting to see just that. But again, we don't know the individual's name. The FBI has not directly confirmed any of this. Fox News moments ago saying that they have also confirmed this report as well. So we'll keep you in the loop as to the January 6th pipe bomber. Again, it appears that this is a Virginia man. That's how it's being detailed by CNN, by the Associated Press, this arrest happening earlier this morning. And it's been about 5 years. So it's about damn time. I bet you, though, probably what lit a fire under their butt was the reporting that was coming out when suspects were being named or alleged individuals were being named in other reports. And so that's likely what caused the FBI to prioritize this. That's just, you know, my little conspiracy, of course. But folks, we've got more interviews to dive into over at the Pentagon. Plus, I'll be bringing you the very latest breaking news and other things that have been happening all around the country, because we've got a lot to catch up on. The New York Times is actually suing now the Pentagon because, well, they're letting us in, and they told them that they can't come in until they sign and agree to the rules. So, folks, a lot more to dive into. Give you that update as well in just a few moments. So do not go anywhere. In the meantime, though, head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. It's still BOGO on your favorite supplements. Buy one, get one free, of course. Head on over to the shop and stock up on all of your favorite supplements. We'll be right back with more.
You are beyond insane if you don't support us, if you don't support this broadcast. I mean, I'm being honest. It's like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. It's like going into the Sahara Desert without a canteen of water. It's like sticking your wiener, you know, in somebody that's got 14 diseases without a condom. Sorry for the gross thing. The point is, shouldn't do it anyway. The point is that I need your support.
And I'm only going to sell you stuff that works really great. Like I said, I've opened a restaurant to be the best food, best prices, best atmosphere, quality service, because I want you to come in 1,000 times. I want a relationship with you. The products are insane. Ultramethylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Iris Sea Moss, the Bovine Colostrum, not a sexy name, but what it does for your hair, skin, and whole body, everything else is insanely good. And we got the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com right now, running until Friday. Black Friday comes early. Buy any supplement. You can buy a supplement that costs $20 and then get a $40 supplement for free. It's not just buy one, get another free of the same thing. We've done that quite a few times. This is buy any supplement, get any other one free. All the new designs, all the new apparel in, the biggest selection of Patriot apparel in the world. Now 670-something designs, ball caps, you name it. 25% off on all that and a bunch of other insane sales. If you're a VIP, you get $40 to spend in the store each month. Special deals, special offers. Anybody, anything should be a VIP. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war. Share the life feeds.
Are you looking at? Do you have a problem?
You are the backers of this operation. You are the InfoWar. So go now to InfoWarStore.com, where we got probably the final shipment of the highest quality fish oil and the highest quality turmeric, Body's Ultimate Turmeric, 95% cuminoid. Those are both 40% off. I want to thank you all for your past support, but you've invested in this operation. It's paid off in global awakening. It's been so incredible. Thank you so much for being at the heart of this operation. So as all of our family members in the InfoWar, all of our team members, all of the emissaries, all the ambassadors of freedom against the globalists, that now at the thick of the battle, as you see it peaking and peaking and peaking, just as I've said, I don't come out here and talk about civil war and their plans for insurrection, their plans for military coups, just to sound scary. And then now if they're openly calling for it. U.S. senators, members of Congress, CIA, because we're beating them, and it's the last move they've got. We're also going to add a link at InfoWarsStore.com today. You can make straight donations on there so that we get all the money and we can get past the shortfall. So I don't want to spend our valuable time on this.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
All right, we're still here at the Pentagon, and joining me is Jay Hurst, and he's going to sit here and talk us through the financial aspects of all of this. Thank you for being here. We greatly appreciate it, of
course. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you about the audits, because the Pentagon has many, we'll say it's failed multiple audits. There's billions of dollars that are unaccounted for. And I kind of wanted to get your perspective on this, because now, obviously, this is something that falls into your wheelhouse.
Sure.
Going through the numbers, figuring out where the funds are, and possibly trying to recover the billions that have been reported unaccounted for in the years past. So where do you guys stand on that currently?
Yeah, so, I mean, the department's been working on trying to get a clean financial statement audit since 2018, very seriously. And we're making progress. But I want to clarify something I didn't know before I really came to this role. When you say you failed an audit, people think that there's fraud or waste or abuse. What we're actually getting back from our auditors is they're saying, we just can't verify what's in your financial statement, right? They're giving a disclaimer of opinion. So they're not saying that we don't have the money. They're just saying, when we look at your records, we just don't feel like there are enough controls to say we can trust them. And so that's what we're working to do, is to make sure we have those controls in there. And it's a tough thing to do for the department because we use effectively what are like Fortune 100 to 500 standards for our accounting. But we're a warfighting organization, you know. There's no firm out there that's trying to value a nuclear missile and say that's the right value to their auditor. And that's the kind of thing we have to do here. It's just a little bit different than most audits.
Okay, so if they say, if the reports say that there's money unaccounted for missing, you would argue and say that's not really the case. It's more of a technical way of kind of framing it.
I would say the auditors are saying they can't validate that the financial statement is correct.
Okay.
I'll give you an example, right? We might have a system out there that says we've got 30 Tomahawk missiles in this warehouse. But unless we go out and inspect that, the auditor can't validate that data, and then they can't trust that as an asset value on our balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of work we have to do. And as you know, we're a giant organization. We distribute across the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have $4 trillion in assets.
Yeah.
So it's an enormous thing to overcome, but we're making a lot of progress.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the upcoming audit report that should be coming out soon. When can we expect that?
I don't know exactly. It's going to be put out by the IG,
okay.
But I would expect in 1 or 2 months.
Is there anything that you know that you might want to give us some insight on yet?
We have a lot of the same problems with integrating our business systems. We have 1,400 business systems across the department. It's a lot. They don't all talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of being successful in this audit is making sure we have that IT consolidation so information flows freely and people can validate records.
Yeah, and that's important, obviously. I want to talk DOGE, because the American people, just a couple of days ago, were kind of on edge because they thought that DOGE was going away, but DOGE has actually moved inside of the Pentagon, kind of, you know, figuratively. So what's happening right now with the funds that are being recovered through DOGE? How are you reallocating that money?
We have a close partnership with DOGE and Comptroller. And the thing they're doing for us right now is they're helping us find contracts we don't need anymore. And then we can take those funds and we can stick them into President Trump's priorities, right? That helps us buy more warfighting equipment. It helps us on the southern border. And so what we're doing with DOGE is they're helping to identify contracts, and then we're removing the funds once we validate we don't need anymore. They're excellent. They've gotten better over time. They're even more precise than they were when they first started, and we've got a great partnership.
What do you want the American people to know, obviously as the comptroller over at the Department of War, that you're working on, that you're really serious and focused on?
I'm here to cut the fat.
Yeah.
Right? We spend a lot of money on defense in this country. We're working very hard to make sure that we're not wasting your money. I'm a service member by background. I want the most lethal force that we've ever fielded in this country and the world. And so we're doing that. We think we save probably $30 billion in FY26 in savings. We're going to save more in FY27. We're going to reinvest that in next generation capabilities for the American people.
I think that's what the American people want to hear. Thank you so much for joining me, JB.
So
appreciate
much.
It. Joining me now is General Anthony Tata in person. You know, I joke all the time and I say we were neighbors, but, you know, I was a South Florida girl, and now Texas has changed up a little bit, but it's good to see you in person, my friend.
Good to see you too, Brian.
It's good to see you. I wanted to talk about COVID because earlier, you know, we became aware that you are the guy who is now going to deal with all of the COVID-related it was a little controversial, the jabs, obviously. Many service members decided not to get the jabs, and thousands of them, actually. And they left the military. Right now, some of them are being offered to be brought back in. Tell us what that looks like right now.
So we had 8,700, Brianna, that left involuntarily.
Yeah.
And then there were some ambiguous number, 10, 20, 30,000 that left voluntarily. And the president signed an executive order in January saying, let's reinstate everybody who wants to come back in. That was separated for not getting the shot. And so that parlayed into a secretary directive to do that and develop a policy. I was confirmed in July. And July 1, we had a fairly low number. We've sixfold increased that number over the last 4 or 5 months. Not a day goes by where I'm not working one of three work streams. The first work stream is reinstating everybody wants to come back in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have called every single of the 8,700 twice that were involuntarily separated. And we have roughly at the start at about 1,000 that were interested. You know, a lot of people move on with their life. They get a job, they build a family, they settle down somewhere. But we have several hundred that are interested in coming back in. Mm-hmm. And there's we're working very hard to have white glove service. They have a Sherpa carrying them through the system, man-to-man coverage, all the way through, to because they come in through the Military Interest Processing Command, where you get your physical, you get your security clearance, you do all the things you got to do for to come back into the service. And then a board looks at their records, and it takes 2 to 3 weeks for that. The board says, okay, yes, Private Smith can come back in, and he deserves X back pay. And they're getting back pay. And some have had six-figure back pay when they come back in. And then they come in, and the secretary did a very high-profile swearing in and reinstatement of Colonel Kevin Bourne, who's now leading the Army Task Force. Mm-hmm. And I did a very high-profile reinstatement of Captain Mark Bashaw, who was court-martialed and kicked out of the service and pardoned by President Trump. And then I reintegrated him back into the service, and he's working for Kevin now in the Army to help the Army effort on reinstatement. So that's the first work stream, is reinstatement. Second work stream is, of course, some just don't want to come back in, but of that 8,700, most of them received an other than honorable discharge or a general discharge under honorable conditions, both of which don't allow you to get your GI Bill, your education benefits, and some other benefits from the VA. So we're looking very hard at a proactive review of all 8,700 records and saying, if you were just kicked out for not getting the shot, we're going to upgrade you to honorable discharge, unlock that GI Bill for you. And also, a lot of those folks had money recouped out, bonus money that was taken back from them. And we're saying we're going to give that money back to you. We're taking a hard look at that. Legal review is happening right now. We've drafted up all the paperwork, and we're about to pull the trigger on that. And the third work stream, two independent task forces taking a look at what happened, why it happened, who made these decisions, and how to prevent it from happening again.
What does accountability look like for those who did force these COVID jabs onto service members? Because there was a lot of factors that were unknown about all of this. And so it was fair for individuals to say, you know, I want to wait to see more data. I don't want to risk this. And those who pushed it, I mean, what's going to happen?
Well, I think that's the beauty of having these two different task forces looking at sort of the same issue from perhaps two different perspectives. And they'll report out to me and make recommendations to me. I wouldn't want to prejudge what they're going to recommend. There were lots of decisions being made. You could take a look at early days of the COVID. It was pretty worse for a lot of people. But there was no shot. And so I was the policy guy for DOD at the time. And we were cordoning off units, special mission units, to make sure that they didn't get infected, because nobody had any idea. The further it went on, we understood that it was, 99.5, chance that nothing was going to happen to you. So at the end of the day, these two reports are going to come back and tell me what they found, and then we'll make decisions and recommendations to the secretary based on what they find.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing that. By the way, how many of the service members that did leave because of all of this, how many of them are officially been brought back in? Do you know a number?
How many people are back in?
Back
now?
In officially, yeah. They've gone through the process, they're back in.
So we've got, and my team can give you the chart, but it's roughly about 89 that are back in right now, I want to say. And then we've got a couple hundred that are being processed right now in the review board. And then we've got probably 600 that are showing interest. And where I think with these high-profile reinstatements we've done, that gets some traction. Talking to you and the others, that gets traction. That makes people think, hey, this is real. We can get come back in. I get back pay. It's something I want to do.
Yeah.
I have a family member that chose to leave the surface instead of get it shot, and he's now interested. He's talking to me, and he's like, hey, I think I might want to come back in.
And I know you're doing a great job at working with the VA on several different fronts, but for those who did get the vaccine and they're suffering from injuries, is there anything that you guys are working on to make sure that they get all the medical treatments that are necessary?
Through my Defense Health Agency, we are tracking and monitoring that. I have 950 hospitals, 955 hospitals and clinics, 40,000 employees throughout the Defense Health Agency that I'm responsible for. And, you know, it was a novel coronavirus, and so it's a novel, shot, and now it's a novel look at what the shot did to, so it's all fresh information, and it's probably too early for me to talk about.
Yeah, makes sense. Let's talk about changing the culture here a bit, because obviously that's a big one for the secretary. He's done an impressive job at the limited amount of time he's been here at doing just that. What are you doing to help in that angle?
Yeah, so that falls squarely within my lane, the culture aspect. I've got 160 K-12 schools, over 600 child development centers, and 300 and some youth activity centers. I've got all the service academies, West Point, Annapolis Air Force Academy. I've got six military colleges. I have the senior service colleges within the military. We've done a holistic review of all of those curricula, and we've taken out all the DEI, all the CRT, and it was really, Brianna, unbelievable what was in there, what we were starting to teach our children, our military children, and what was being put into our service academies and into our military colleges. It's been a huge effort to pull that out. I think we've got some more layers to pull at. And as I begin my circulation next year, I've been sort of had one foot nailed to the floor here just to get fully integrated and everything over the last 5 months since I've been here. But I'm going to start traveling. I'm going to start visiting the K-12 schools around the globe, all 160 of them. I can't promise to get all 160.
Yeah, it's
but,
a lot.
The three service academies, already January, February, I'm going to be hitting those. And then certain senior service colleges, the military colleges. And just getting in and taking a look and talking to the leadership there and having them understand that we're focused on those things that unify us, not those things that divide us. Not those things that say, oh, you're different and separate, and so you belong. That the reason we're seeing such good recruiting numbers is because the president and the secretary are focused on those things that unify us. We're focused on lethality, unity of purpose, common mission, support and defend the nation, as opposed to you're separate and distinct as an individual because of these seven different characteristics that you have.
Yeah, well, we look forward to seeing all of that. I know you got your work cut out for you. So, General Tatum, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brianna. It's very good to talk to you, and congratulations on being here.
It's exciting, and we pissed off all the right people, too, on the way over here. So I love that. Thank you so much, sir.
All right. Thank you.
I'm currently with one of the busiest guys in the building right now, Mr. Sean Parnell. Okay, you're probably second busiest in the building these
maybe
days.
Second to the secretary, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You carry multiple hats, though. You do a lot here. I want to get into that in a little bit, but, you know, we just are starting to hear some leaks from the mainstream media, and I kind of want to get your take on the Signalgate.
Yeah.
Obviously, the IG report being leaked out there. Are you happy with the report?
Of course. I mean, so you remember the narrative back in March, I think, when the Signal stuff broke, was that the secretary shared classified information and broke the law, and shared classified war plans and put American troops at risk. I mean, obviously, like what the IG report shows now is that the secretary did not share classified information, so, and did not break the law. And to me, and not just to me, I mean, the secretary has been totally exonerated. I mean, the narrative that the media pushed back then in the heat of the Signalgate stuff was fake, and today that narrative has been exposed. And, you know, you'll see out there, you know, a bunch of headlines where you know, mainstream media outlets are using the word sensitive. That's not a classification term. They are using that term to make it seem like he shared classified information. But the fact is, he did not, and he did not put U.S. troops at risk. I'm sure you're going to see that fake narrative peddled out there as well, as evidenced by the success of the operation itself. Operation Rough Rider was a clear-cut mission with a clear-cut end state. No U.S. troops killed, no U.S. troops wounded, thank God. So obviously, no Americans were put at risk. So we're glad that the IG report is out. We're glad that we can put this entire fake news narrative to bed. But He's completely cleared, no classified information, didn't break the law, and that's the most important part.
And I think our audience understands, though, the Biden administration approved the use of Signal, and so
that's right.
People are
that's
using
right.
it. They don't mention that in the report.
Secretary Austin used Signal in this building.
Yeah.
Like
when he was here, that was a week that he was out. Well, no one knew where he was.
I don't know what he was using when he disappeared for a week and went AWOL. And by the way, so like that was talked, like Secretary talked about a little bit that today, like when you met with him.
Yeah.
But just to put that in perspective for people that are out there, like, he's right when he says that he can't leave this building for 5 seconds without people wondering where he is or knowing where he is. And you kind of got to know where the – that's why he has somebody that follows him around the nuclear football. You got to know where the secretary is because at any given moment he might have to make a really, really important decision, right? I mean, again – somebody follows the secretary around with the nuclear football.
Yeah.
So for Austin to disappear, one, is a huge deal, and no one know about it. Mm-hmm. But also his deputy, the deputy secretary of defense, didn't even know he was having surgery, didn't even know he was out of the fight. He just disappeared.
The White House, too, I think, right?
Yeah, nobody freaking knew. Nobody knew. It's a huge controversy mm-hmm. that didn't get any play because the press corps that we had in the building did nothing but peddle the Democrat line. But it's a new day now. We're excited for it.
Yeah, well, and I want to get your take on this, too, because obviously everyone's talking about Afghanistan now, and it's heartbreaking because of the terrorists who did shoot those two guardsmen here in Washington, D.C. I want to get your take on this, because this individual worked with the CIA, and that's a big one that everyone is saying, well, I mean, that's really concerning. But you, a soundbite that you actually were, I think it was when we were on Fox, is recirculating about you detailing what happened with, you guys had one of your interpreters. And these are people that are on your side, you think they're on your side, you could trust them. But one of your own actually put you guys at risk. And sadly, someone passed away from all of this.
Yeah. So we had an interpreter embedded with my unit. I was in Afghanistan for 16 months. And we had an interpreter that was embedded with my unit, that went everywhere with my unit. Mm-hmm. And really, your interpreter is your connection to the local populace in whatever country that you're in. None of us speak the language. And in Afghanistan, there's Pashto, there's Farsi, there's Waziri, and they spoke an odd dialect in my area. So there weren't a lot of interpreters that could have embedded with us in the first place. Mm-hmm. But this guy was with us for 16 months. We thought he was friendly. It turned out he wasn't. And he ended up disclosing our location to an Iranian IED maker in Pakistan that ended up placing a plastic Italian TC-6 anti-tank mine right where my truck was supposed to park. And there's more metal in a pack of cigarettes than are on these mines. So we have mine detectors and things like that we sweep, but it wouldn't have been able to detect a mine like this. And the reason why they used a mine like this is because they had our interpreter outlining what our capabilities were to the enemy. And so, you know, my truck rolled over this mine. Mine blew up underneath it, blew everybody out of the truck, and killed my forward observer, who was sitting right behind my seat in the truck. Jeremiah Cole died on the objective because an interpreter turned on us. And, you know, that's kind of like what the American people need to understand. Like, Afghan culture, yes, it's very tribal. Islam is not completely fair to say that it's filled with a bunch of Islamic radicals, even though it is. Like, there are different terrorist cells that are definitely Islamic radicals, but primarily Afghanistan is tribal. It's like the Flintstones meet the Jetsons over there, you know, with us in country. And so their loyalty usually goes to the highest bidder. And we learned that, like, in a very, very difficult way when I was in Afghanistan with our interpreter that turned on us. But the point is that during the botched surrender of Afghanistan in 2021 under Biden, like, bringing tens of thousands of unvetted Afghans into this country, and I say unvetted, and it's like, we have this idea of vetting in this country where we all have a social security number, we all have a birthday, we all have a driver's license, we all have a driver's license number. In Afghanistan, most people do not know how old they are. They don't know when their birthday is. There's absolutely no record keeping. And just because somebody is vetted to work with Americans in country, it doesn't mean that they've undergone the rigorous vetting to bring them into our country, right? Doesn't mean that their values be consonant with our culture. So it's not a good idea to do that. I said it then, and unfortunately, we're seeing that play out before our eyes here in our nation's capital with the tragic shooting of two National Guardsmen here in D.C.
Yeah, it is absolutely devastating.
It's horrible.
Sean, before you go, though, we're waiting for your report on the Afghan, obviously, failures. When can we expect that to be released?
So the promise that I made people in the building was that it would be out and completely unclassified by the summer. I'm hoping to have it done earlier by March. And look, like that was a dark spot in American history. And it's obviously very personal to me, having fought in that country, having lost friends in that country, Brianna, but you know, a very small percentage of Americans fought during 20 years of war in Afghanistan. So a very heavy burden was carried by a very small percentage of people. And not just the people who fought there, but also their families. And obviously you have 13 Americans that were killed during the actual surrender itself. You got to get it right. And we have to make sure that even though some of the information might be embarrassing to people in this department or embarrassing to the department itself, that doesn't matter. What matters is being honest and transparent with the American people. So you'll see it, hopefully, if things go well in March. And you have my commitment to completely declassify everything. We'll let the American people look at and read the report, read the facts as we find them. And not have to worry about overclassification. They'll have the truth, and that's what I think matters.
Sean Parnell, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah,
we appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, it was an interesting time over at the Pentagon, obviously, meeting with some incredible patriots who are doing their very best to reform and correct the previous regime's mistakes when they were occupying the space. Sean Parnell making some big waves yesterday. You know, we just learned, and just to put this in perspective, when that interview began, we just learned moments before that began that there was a leak, probably a congressional member on the Democratic side, obviously, but there was a leak about the Intel report, the IG report I'm referring to, and that on Signalgate, and that they were trying to frame it a certain way and say that it was actually negative on the Secretary of War. I haven't seen it myself. Obviously, Sean Parnell has seen it, and so that's the reason why I asked him there. Can't give him much pushback because it wasn't officially released, so I didn't have the details in front of me. But again, folks, I mean, Parnell's saying there's nothing to see here, that it in fact vindicates the administration, it vindicates the Secretary of War. So that was his take on it. We're supposed to get that report, though, later today so we could read that for ourselves and we could see. But, folks, we got more to discuss on the front of me having access to the Pentagon. Obviously, this was an eventful week and there was incredible journalists there. But guess what? Guess who's hating on us? The New York Times. They just actually filed a lawsuit. And it's very interesting. I was reading it this morning. I'm going to bring you the very latest on that. But in the meantime, I'm going to need you all to head on over right now to the AlexJonesStore.com because we're doing something for the holidays. It's the 12 days of Christmas sale. So it's BOGO on all supplements. For the remaining 10 days, we'll be running a series of limited sales. These sales could end without warning. So make sure you take some action before they end. Head on over right now to the AlexJonesStore.com. It's buy one, get one free on supplements while supplies last. Now, this sale is expected to end this weekend. So head on over right now. Fill up your cart before we run out of supplies, of course, over at the AlexJonesStore.com. You can even mix match your favorite supplements over at the AlexJonesStore.com. All right, there's more happening. We've got two more hours to kind of go through the news cycle, plus bring you an update on what was going on in the Pentagon. As you guys could see, a lot was happening there. So I will bring you the very latest on all fronts in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. Also, in the meantime, if you haven't done so already, now head on over to AlexJonesApp.com. That's AlexJonesApp.com. And download the app. It's how you stay in touch with us. Regardless of whatever happens next, we bring you the truth all of the time over the app. So make sure you do just that. Be right back.
Please remember, I can't battle the globalists without your word of mouth, your prayer, and your support. We make it easy at thealexjonesstore.com. We have a massive 12 days of Christmas sale going right now, a huge sale going right now. We will be running a series of limited time sales. These sales could end without warning as each product sells out. So make sure you take advantage of it, ladies and gentlemen. Add any supplement, whether it's a $20 one, you name it, any other supplement you want, absolutely free. So you can buy a $25 supplement, get a $45 supplement free. Add any supplement to your cart and get another supplement for free. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, you name it. So many other great new products that are in stock as well. TheAlexJonesStore.com. For just the next 5 days, there's a typo in this ad, of course. It's the 12 days of Christmas sale. For the next 5 days, you can buy any supplement, get any other supplement free at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
The bat phone is ringing off the hook. The Joker is at it again.
Quick, Robin. We must analyze this threat. Do you have a location on the Joker, Robin?
Yes, he's at the abandoned warehouse on 5th Street.
I'm sick of that Newsom Joker. He's going down, Robin!
Blast you, Bat Brain! Must you ruin every rib-tickling riddle I concoct?
He thought he was going to get away with all of that Ultra DNA revival!
Christmas with Alex and crew on cocoa and a coffee brew. All the presents under the tree, everyone happy and full of glee. Frosty, Santa, Rudolph, and more. Get a gift from the Alex Jones store.
Make a friend happy, smiles ear to ear. It's the most wonderful time of